up, what's up? Welcome to another episode of All Over VoiceOver with Kip VH. I'm your host, Kip VH, and with me in studio, the lovely, the talented Cassandra Lee Morris. Or Cassandra Morris, do you go with the Lee, I know, on your social media? Or how
yeah,
do you...
I've kind of transitioned to Cassandra Lee Morris.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's, it's the longest name ever, but it's fine. Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with a long name. I've had a very long name for a long time.
Yeah,
my birth name is Christopher, so it was Christopher John Van Den Heuvel.
Yeah, well,
so short to get.
Just own it, you know?
Yeah, you're right.
People are trying to shorten everything these days. Just go with the long name.
That's right. Yeah. I agree. It's awesome to have you in here.
Thank you.
We met, I mean, I think, what, like 3 weeks ago?
Yeah, not maybe? Too long ago.
At Outlaw Sound, and then we had this amazing lunch with Dan Schilling, who wrote a book that I just narrated.
Yes.
And that was one of the most incredible lunches.
I know, right? It was such a surprise to be invited to that lunch, to be honest, because it was Dennis Kao, the producer,
And
then I was working on an audiobook with him that day, and then you and Dan came. And Dennis was just like, do you want to go on this lunch with me? And I'm like, sure, free lunch. But also, like, you know, as voiceover people, we don't get to socialize a lot on the job or even, like, with other actors because we're always, like, recording solo most of the time. So it's just nice to, like, meet other people who do the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in the middle of that, so there's Dennis, who's an audiobook producer, who both Cassandra and I work with. And then there's Dan Schilling, who is, worked special ops, and he's interested, and two voice actors, and we're, like, talking about all of the stuff, and he's describing these black ops that he's worked on, and he's like, that's cool, but I'm interested in what you guys are doing as voice actors. Talk to me about that.
I know. I had so many questions I wanted to ask him, but didn't know how.
Yeah.
But he was fascinating. And so nice.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I can't wait to read his book.
It's something
you
else.
Should shout it out.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Alone at Dawn. It comes out, the audiobook. It's the true story about the most recent Medal of Honor winner, John Chapman, who is an Air Force combat controller who died on Taker Gar in the early days of the Afghanistan War. And it's the story of his heroism and about these unknown special forces guys. It's an amazing story, but Dan Schilling is the author, and it drops, I think, early June.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So complete opposite of what we do.
Complete opposite.
Yeah.
That's right. Let me back all the way up. Where are you from?
I was born and raised in Connecticut, and I basically lived there from age 0 to 18, and then I moved to New York City. I always knew I wanted to live in New York.
What launched that trajectory? Were you doing, like, theater and stuff, or was it, like, what made you want to be in New York from Connecticut? You grew up adjacent to it?
Yeah, so I grew up, like, an hour and 20-minute train ride outside of New York City, so part of, like, the culture of where I grew up is, like, taking the Metro North train into New York City. We don't have anything like that in L.A. I miss that.
Hmm.
But, on the weekends, my parents would take me to New York. We would see shows. We would go do stuff. And I just loved the vibe of New York. I loved the culture and, you know, just it was so different than suburban Connecticut, which I thought was, like, very boring.
Yeah.
And, like, ho-hum. But, like, looking back now, like, it was a great place to grow up. It was beautiful and quiet and safe. But, New York, just the energy, like, drew me in. I also grew up taking dance. So I danced for, like, 8 years. And then I would do community theater in Connecticut, too. So that's kind of where I got my love of performing and learned a lot, learned how to be on stage and things like that.
Man, that stuff, it's so, isn't it funny how, like, there's stuff that you'll pick up, like, I pick up from doing high school theater that,
oh, yeah.
Like, I totally dismiss now, like, but, like, your stagecraft and, like, just simple stuff like projecting, filling a room, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
How that's still so
it true. Stays with you, yeah, especially the, just everything, like the culture of theater.
Yeah.
Like you learn blocking, you learn how to take direction, you learn how to work with other actors, like, And then bonding with the cast. That was, like, my favorite part. Because, like, you know, you do a show or anything, you become, like, a family, so.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
That's so true. I hadn't realized up until this moment how much I was dismissing the basics of those things that you really, that really do inform your ability to, when you go to a larger market, to be able to not look like a fool when you walk into a rehearsal hall.
Yeah. I mean, like, I've never had stage fright either. I think it's because, like, since I was 8, I was just, like, shoved on a stage. And it's like, all right, do your thing, and you're wonderful, great. So I've never felt, like, insecure about, like, public speaking or being in front of people. Yeah.
That's awesome. Did your parents have a background in performance? So they were just like, you want to do this, so you should do it.
Yeah, it was pretty much like that. My dad was like a hobby musician.
Mm-hmm.
But, and my mom liked to write like as a hobby, but nobody in my family was in the performing arts. So I was kind of like the only one that was really into it. And they were like, okay, she likes to dance. She could do that. And I always wanted to go to New York to do auditions and stuff. Mm. So when I was in middle school, they, like, signed me up for an acting class in New York on Saturday mornings.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, they were pretty supportive of me, like, getting training outside of just, like, community theater and stuff like that. So,
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So you moved to New York at 18?
Pretty much, yeah.
Pretty much-ish.
I went to NYU, so it was, like, I was going to college. But I still feel like I moved to New York, even though I was spending the summers back in Connecticut.
Right. And you studied theater at NYU?
I actually didn't. So I was very apprehensive about actually, like, committing to a career as an actor. Mm. So I was also really passionate about writing and journalism. So I studied journalism.
Uh-huh.
And I just assumed that when I graduated college, I would have that career, and I would kind of have to, like, give up acting because as I was working professionally as a teenager, I would work with a lot of adults. So, and I would see that it was always a hustle and it was always a struggle. So I wasn't sure that I wanted that kind of, like, roller coaster career. Like, I wanted something steady.
Yeah.
But now here I am, and I'm a full-time voice actor, so I've made it work. Yeah. I don't know. It just kind of happened.
It's fascinating to witness that struggle firsthand, you know, and kind of get a sense of what it entails. And then to be in it and to have those months or years that are, I don't know what I'm doing. This sucks.
Yeah.
But... you know, it's not necessarily, it's hard to describe. It's not necessarily the thrill of being at the top of a hill of a roller coaster or something. It's like just sustaining and feeling like a normal person and being able to take care of, like, having credit cards paid and stuff like that while being an actor.
It's live in a nice place and have a decent car and not feel like you don't know where your next meal is coming from.
Right.
So, but, like, having the journalism degree did help me, you know, like, right after I graduated, I wasn't doing acting full-time. Like, I worked at an ad agency. And I actually worked at Audible.
Did you really?
For a little bit, yeah. I worked as a production coordinator. And then I like, had enough acting work to, like, quit that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so then I did just voiceover for a long time. And then when I moved to L.A., it was, like, starting over again because I didn't have as many contacts and, like, nobody knew me. So I went back to journalism and then while still doing acting.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I've kind of, you know, balanced doing both for a while.
What's the nature of the journalism that you were doing or do? Or is it like what kind of stuff are you writing about?
So when I moved to LA, I got a job at, like, a local news place called Patch.
Okay.
It's different now, but we were covering, like, hyper local news. So I was, like, working out of Sierra Madre and, like, Montrose, which are, like, small towns in the San Gabriel Valley. So it wasn't, like, too exciting, but it gave me a really flexible schedule.
Awesome.
So as long as I got all my, like, stories filed and I had, you know, everything wrapped up in that, I could go and do jobs and do auditions, like, no problem.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, but I don't do as much writing as I used to.
Mm-hmm. Did you do creative writing as well as the journalistic stuff, or that's your predominant?
I did creative writing, but, like, nothing that I published.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but hopefully someday. I have like a half-written novel. I feel like everybody does, though.
Have you ever done NaNoWriMo?
You know, I really like the idea of it, but I just never committed to it.
Oh, man. My wife's done it, I think, 3 years.
Oh, that's cool. Did she get a finished novel out of it?
Yeah,
that's
she's awesome. In process, like literally, I don't know if I'm supposed to say, but she's been workshopping it
that's
and
great.
Like is can really see clearly where it's going and the finishing steps. And it's like, it's been just a real gift to her.
Nice.
You know, as a place to put her to that kind of a place to put that kind of a creative energy.
Yeah, it's really cool.
You know, but for those listening, NaNoWriMo is the National Novel Writing Month.
Yeah, it's November.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you have to write 50,000 words, I think.
In a month. Yeah, but it's doable. I mean, people do it.
Yeah.
You just have to, like, commit to doing it.
It's crazy. So when you're in New York, what kind of work were you doing? How did you discover voiceover work?
So, I started off, and this was when I was, like, 13. So I was taking, like, TV acting classes and, like, film acting classes because that's what I wanted to do. I was never, like, a great singer or anything, so I didn't see myself as, like, a Broadway actor, Broadway is, like, huge in New York. Mm. So I was like, I'm gonna be in TV and film. So, I would go out for, like, a ton of auditions for that. I signed with Abrams Artists, and they just had a big voiceover division.
Oh, wow.
So they would also send me out for voiceovers. And it's funny because, like, the first professional job I ever did that I, like, got paid for was a voiceover job.
Are you serious?
Yeah. So I feel like that was kind of, like, predicting, like, what I would eventually become as an actor. Anyway, I was doing a lot of commercials, basically. Okay. Like, I booked a lot of on-camera commercials. And I would do a lot of radio spots, like voiceover stuff. I did one independent film. I think it aired on Showtime for a little bit. Yeah, I mean, it was cool. I was like, oh my gosh, I booked a film. Like, it's amazing. Yeah, so like, but that experience was like insane. I was like, I think I turned 16 or 17, like while we were filming, and I like totally like felt like an adult, like. Really cool.
I'm set. I got a trailer. I got all this stuff.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was like my dream come true. But that's the only film I've ever done. But that's fine. It's called Double Parked. Uh-huh. I'm sure it still exists somewhere, like on DVD. Let's see. But I don't know. I just always worked a lot in VO.
Yeah.
And I think somebody like, and I would always take acting classes. I think someone like told my mom like, she should really get involved in VO. Like, I don't know. I don't remember why. I think the woman, like, made a living as a voiceover artist.
Okay.
And my mom, like, listened to her and, like, was, like, talking to my agency. Like, please send her out for more VO stuff.
Yeah.
So.
And it's kind of at a time, like, where there's not home studios and that kind of stuff, right?
Oh, yeah. No, no, no.
No recording capability at home. It's just kind of like, aside from, like, a little tape player.
Yeah.
But for the most part, you're going up to do the auditions and stuff to casting directors up there.
Yeah. So it's different now. Like, I record 99.9% of my auditions either in my home studio or I'll go to my agency and record in their booth. But, like, back in the day, you went to a casting office and you recorded the voiceover audition for the casting person. So it was a lot of, like, after school, I would take the train in and, like, do my auditions and then do my homework on the train ride home.
Right.
Yeah.
What a great, I mean, I love going into, I do the same thing. Like, I love going into my agency. I love getting the feedback from the booth directors and stuff. But, like, to get that direct feedback from a casting director.
It's invaluable.
Boy.
I miss it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they can redirect you. And then they can gauge, like, how directable you are, what you're like to work with, and then they can relay that to producers. And I feel like it's maybe harder to break in because if you're not a name, if people don't know you, they might be a little more hesitant to cast you if they're only hearing your audition because they don't know you personally. So
they don't think to ask you what your range might be. Or,
right.
You know, it's like there's an incomplete knowledge of what you may be capable of, or whether, like, I had an audition recently where we got a redirect. I did it, and he was like, I don't hear the character there at all. And I was like, oh, okay, well, let's do it again.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, that feeling of, oh, I'm treating this audition the way I would normally in another space, where I'd be like, oh, I'm going to take multiple steps at this.
Yeah.
Whereas, oh, there's a casting director there. Maybe I'm going to, I don't know. Like, it was one of those things where I left the room going, I thought I had that. And then I felt it slip away. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I've gotten into the habit of, instead of just submitting one take for animation, I'll submit two or three. But I'll make sure they're very, very different.
Yes.
Just so, like, they can hear my vocal range. And I'm not just talking about, like, saying the words differently. I'm talking about, like, a completely different take on the character or a completely different voice.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I found that's pretty, that's been, like, pretty effective, so.
When you do that, do you change, that's so interesting, do you change your character's intention for the scene? Or
sometimes.
Do you maintain that throughout?
It depends what it is. Like, if it's, like, a wacky animated character, you can do a lot more with it than if it's, like, a video game and it's, like, straighter.
Yeah, where it's, like, the intention is super clear. It's, like, get out of this office. There are monsters coming. There's not
You're
a lot of
battle.
Ways to reinterpret that.
Right, yeah.
Right.
It's not going to be like, oh, I'm in battle. Cool, yeah.
Right. She's tough. She doesn't care that she's in battle.
I mean,
she's
I guess you could do that.
Yeah. I mean, you'll have a bunch of really, I don't know if that's the range I want to explore.
Yeah.
That's great. Do you send them all as one take or like one MP3?
Yeah. Unless they like specifically request.
Yeah.
There was one actually recently that was like, we're open to multiple takes, but on separate MP3s. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go with one take and like nail it.
Yeah.
So, well, hopefully I nailed it. We'll find out in a couple
That's
weeks.
Right.
Yeah.
You were telling me, back to coming up, mm-hmm. like when you did, we were discussing this right before we started recording too, but talking about audiobooks, about your first audiobook experience.
Yeah.
And it's, and would you share that again?
It was, sure. So it was 2004, and the audiobook landscape was completely different. There were none, but, like, it was very rare to, like, download an audiobook at that time.
Yeah.
Mostly you would buy them on CDs.
Yes.
So way less audiobooks were produced, and they were, a lot more money was put into the production. So, you know, you'd have the actor, and then a director, and then an engineer. Whereas today, it's usually just you recording yourself and directing yourself, or you have a director slash engineer. It's just like one person.
Yeah.
So my agency sent me an audition for a novel, and it was called Dear Zoe. And I just loved the story so much. It was about like this teenage girl like dealing with the death of her sister. There was like a lot of grieving going on, and it was how her family dealt with it. And it was just so beautifully written. Like, like the sides made me cry. So I went in for the audition, and, like, I actually cried during the audition. But it worked out because they said that I was the only one that was really, like, connecting with the text.
Yeah.
So that's why they cast me. And that was with Paul Rubin, who was a prolific audiobook producer. He really directed every book that he did. Like, he would see the book like a stage play. As I was reading the book, he'd be like, all right, let's go back and do the scene with the mother again and adjust the mother and make her more like this. Whereas today, like, that's so rare to have somebody directing or listening to you that, like, goes that in depth with it.
Yeah.
So that experience really, like, shaped my entire view of how audiobooks should be narrated and produced. And then I did another book with him, like, I don't know, maybe 6 months later. And then I think maybe one more. And then that's how I got into the whole scene.
How do you prepare to do a book, given that that's how you value programmed?
Mm-hmm.
Do you direct yourself in that way in advance? Are you kind of bringing that thought process in the moment to as you're reading the text? What's your approach?
So I always prep the book first. So I'll read it, but I'll like speed read it. I won't like read it like I'm reading something for pleasure, because that would take forever.
Oh my God.
Yeah. But I just kind of get a sense of like what the main character's journey is, like where she starts, where she's going, like the other, you know, characters and how they influence. I mean, all mine are she, so I'm saying her. But yeah, I just kind of like get an idea of like what the overarching story is and what the character's journey is. And then I'll just go in and like, I feel like now I just have like an innate like sense of, because I've done so many. I've done like over 200 books.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So I kind of just like in the moment will like adjust and kind of like act it like I'm doing a live play.
Yeah.
It's like a one-woman performance. That's how I like to describe audiobooks.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, and then if there's something I don't like, I will ask to go back and do it again.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It's interesting. I mean, you do experience the book as the reader the way the audience experiences it without the knowledge in advance of what's going to happen.
Yeah. So I try not to, like, if I know what's going to, I mean, I know what's going to happen, but I don't like hint at that, because then it spoils it.
Yeah.
For the listener.
Yeah.
So.
I agree.
Yeah, it's like a fine line.
It is. And I really like, and we both work with one of the producers that we work with Dennis Kao, is one of those guys who I appreciate his direction. But and I think that he does a nice job of keeping an ear towards consistency.
Mm-hmm.
I remember doing a book where there were three narrators on it, and the track that I was on was unrelated to what was going on in the past or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to a point where I read something, and Dennis goes, can we take a second? I was like, yeah, sure. And I looked through the glass window over to studio, and he's crying.
Aww.
And I'm like, are you okay? What happened? He was like, no. He's like, you would not know anything about it unless you followed the full journey. But he's like, something just paid off from something we read 2 days ago
another
narrator did that really hit him. And like, I love that stuff. Well, how do you handle when the material gets super emotional? I know how I handle it, but what's your process? I mean, how does it work through it?
I mean, I let myself like feel it and experience it, because then it will come out in the read, you know, and I want to do it justice.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, I definitely get like teary-eyed. I haven't like bawled in a session in a long time. I think like one of the first books I did, I was bawling because it had like a 9/11 reference and like it was dealing with like death and stuff like that. So like, obviously I was like in the story. So I was like, I had to like take a 10-minute break.
Yeah.
But now, I mean, I control like the tears, because like if you're crying, like you're going to get stuffy and it's not going to sound good.
Yeah.
So, but I do let myself experience everything and just like go through the emotions, because that will come out in the read and it will make it sound better.
Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. How did you get started doing that work here after leaving New York and moving out, and kind of the sea change that happened in audiobooks with the advent of Audible and streaming and the volume of production?
So actually, Dennis was one of the first people that I met out here.
Really?
Yeah. So when I moved out here, I was like, all right, I have to get work for myself. And the only way I know how to do this is to network. So, I mean, obviously I got an agent too, but I just knew historically that like your agent can get you in the room and can get you some jobs, but like I ultimately, like, I feel like I get myself most of my jobs, you know, because this industry is so much of like who you know, not in a bad way. It's just like who is aware of what you can do. You know, it's not like, oh, I'm friends with that person, so they're going to cast me.
Right.
It's more like, oh, I know that person, and they know that I do teen audiobooks, or they know that I can do this voice and whatever. So anyway, Dennis Kao was like one of the first people I met out here. I had a lot of connections with like the audiobook world, because I had worked at Audible. So I met with him and I was just like, hey, you know, I'm new out here. I'm a voiceover actor. I'm just trying to like meet as many people as possible. And he introduced me to another actor. His name was Dave Mallow. And he was so nice. He was like, welcome to LA. I moved here like 20 years ago. Here's like 15 contacts.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And I was like, whoa. Like, you don't even know me. So, and it was all through email. Like I had never.
Are you serious?
It was all through email. Yeah. I think it helped that I had a resume and that I had been working since I was like 13 years old. Yeah. So I clearly was like a professional in my field.
Yeah.
But it was just so nice of him to be like, email these people, email these people. So I just started sending out my reel to all of these studios. And some of them, like, welcomed me right away. Some of them, it took, a year or two of following up. Some of them just never responded. But, like, now I work for them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was just, I, like, hit the ground. And I was like, I'm sending my reel out to literally anybody.
That and, so like yeah. I mean, just to circle back to that, like the networking process, I think for some people it's very organic. For some people it's like they stop at the door of that in terms of their, like, you could have all the skill in the world and have some decent credits, but when it comes to that, I gotta reach out, just like screeching to a halt.
Yeah.
And I fall somewhere halfway in between those two camps.
Yeah.
And like what is, what's your either process and or advice or encouragement, or like, how would you speak to people who are not necessarily resistant, but afraid of it?
Yeah. So it's, I think it's totally natural to not like to sell yourself or talk about yourself or talk about your talents, because it can feel awkward. It's like, am I bragging about myself? Am I coming off as a narcissist? It's awkward. I get it. Especially as a creative person.
Yeah.
I've seen this in all sorts of creatives, like writers, musicians, artists. Like, they don't want to just walk up to a stranger and be like, hey, I'm so-and-so and I do this. Like, and I get it. So I had to, like, train myself to get over that. And it was super awkward at first. Like, I remember being at some, like, audiobook, like, networking party in New York City. And I knew some people there, but there were people that, like, I knew I just had to go over and introduce myself.
Yeah.
So I would just, like, talk myself off and be like, you could do it, you could do it. Like, it'll take 30 seconds and it'll be over and done.
Yeah.
And also, like, taking improv classes completely helped me, because I was like, I've done the dumbest stuff on stage. Like, I've made such an idiot out of myself, and I lived through it.
Yeah.
So if I could do that, I can walk up to somebody and introduce myself. So I would just be like, I'd go up to them and be like, hi, I'm Cassandra. I heard you work for blah, blah, blah. I love this about your company. I just wanted to introduce myself. And 10 out of 10 times, they were so nice. And they were just, like, welcoming, like, oh, nice to meet you, like, blah, 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 you know? So it's very rare that someone's going to be like, who are you? Get out of my face. Like, nobody's really going to do that. Like, nobody's that mean.
Yeah, that's
so,
right.
So, like, once I realized that, like, most people are open, I kind of got over it. But there is a line. Like, you don't want to, like, walk up to someone and just, like, spout off your resume.
Yeah.
So the way to make it organic, I found, is to just, like, introduce yourself. And this works via email, too.
Mm.
The best way is if you have somebody that you know in common.
Yes.
So you could just say, hi, my name is blah, blah, blah. So-and-so gave me your name. Because then immediately they're like, oh, you know my friend Michelle? You're probably not a psycho.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I just say something about their company or a project that they've worked on that I like. Because, you know, obviously I'm going to be, like, familiar with their work if I'm, like, trying to work for them.
Yeah.
So just be like, oh, I love this project. It was so cool. And, like, that's genuine because I actually did like something that they had worked on.
Yeah.
And then I just drop in a line. I mean, this is, like, basically an email format. I got it down to, like, one sentence. Like, I specialize in, like, if say it's audiobooks, I specialize in middle grade and young adult audiobooks, I don't know. And then maybe I would drop in something like, I've done like over 50 or something like that.
Yeah.
And then just like, here's a link to my reel. If you have time, I would love for you to check it out. And then thank them. Like, thank you so much for your time. I know you're super busy. And then just like sign your name. So,
yeah,
I mean, that kind of transitioned into like a live convo to like an email. But
it's that, it is that same kind of a thing of like the way people define like an elevator pitch. If you think of it being a 30 second or 20 second email that is, and that you're not attaching 7 headshots and your, you know, 25 meg uncompressed wave demo reel.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like being conscious of their server and their time.
Right. Yeah, because they are doing you a favor. Like, you have to, like, realize that. Like, their time is valuable. They already have, like, probably 20 other things on their plate today. And then, like, a random person emails them. They're going to be like, what? So if you keep it short and to the point and, like, very humble and grateful, that's when I've always gotten the most response. And also, you just have to send it with, like, a vibe. Like, even just, like, within yourself that you're not, like, desperate. You know, because it'll come off and people will be like, oh, my God, like this person like needs work or something.
Yeah.
But if you just think like, hey, like I'm a talented person. I have trained for X many of years. I have done all these projects. I'm a professional. If this person doesn't email me back, it's not the end of the world because I do all of this as well.
Yeah.
So like here, like maybe this will work. And if they write me back, cool. And if not, like, it's not the end of the world.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm presenting myself to you to solve your problem.
Yeah, that too.
You know, you may need the skills that I provide and you might not have that, you know, and it's important to make that introduction and they'll be grateful for it.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, if you have somebody that can like introduce you or just you can drop somebody's name that you have in common, that goes a long, long way.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's awesome. Yeah. That's great. Now, I know you in the from our audiobook commonality, but you're also a remarkably versatile animation and commercial artist as well. Like, how did you find yourself in the animation world?
So I have always had a voice that sounds like young and kind of unique. I've always sounded way younger than I actually am. So I discovered that was an asset, not something to be made fun of.
Was it
when
has
I
it,
got
had
into
it,
voiceover?
Had it not been an asset for you? Had you felt like it was something that you were? Were you ever self-conscious of it, or was it a thing that people made fun of you for?
Yeah, kind of, yeah. Like in eighth grade, people would call me Squeaks.
Oh my God!
But it, I like embraced it. I had like at the time, like what are those dog tags? Like they were super popular, so I had one like engraved with Squeaks on it and I would like wear it around. Yeah, actually my eighth grade English teacher gave me that nickname and then it just caught on. I know it's so weird, right? But I just embraced it. But I always had this feeling like, you know, when I would talk on the phone to people, like they would think I was like a child when I was an adult. So yeah, I was always a little weird about it. And then I had an acting teacher tell me that I had to learn how to lower my voice and, like, breathe differently, because, like, I guess maybe I even still do it now. I, like, breathe from my chest when you're supposed to, like, breathe from your diaphragm. And she was saying, like, that's why my voice sounds like this.
All right.
I know, right? But it's, like, one of those moments. I feel like so many artists and creative people have them. Like, somebody will be like, you need to change this thing about yourself. But then that thing becomes the thing that makes them successful.
Yes.
Yeah, so that was my voice. But it was great for animation because I could play younger characters. And so much of animation is for, like, preschoolers, elementary school-age kids. So, yeah, I found, like, a nice niche in there. And then, like, with anime, I've done a lot of anime roles, and they always want, like, the English dub version to sound like the Japanese version. And the Japanese trend for like the past 10 years and still now is like a high breathy voice.
Yeah.
So it's like I don't even have to change my voice to do that.
Oh man.
Yeah, so I've worked a lot in that. And then like same with video games, like yeah, I'm not going to be like the, like, badass, like, female, like, combat controller who's, like, you know, blasting everybody. But there are, like, a lot of creatures, and there's a lot of, like, characters. Like, I play a lot of cats, like, in video games. So, like, awesome. Yeah, I mean, it's, you, I just embraced it, and it's really just been an asset, and it's been, like, my calling card. It's, like, my thing. So.
That's so great. Yeah. That's so great. How do you, well, like, I've never done anime, and I'm fascinated by that world and that process. Uh-huh. How did you, were you a fan of anime to begin? Do you have to be a fan to do it? And how did you find yourself doing that work? And what's that work like to do?
So I wasn't, like, super into anime when I booked Yu-Gi-Oh! Uh-huh. That was in New York. All I knew was that it was a Saturday morning cartoon. Like, that's how I thought of it, even though, like, I guess it's not technically a cartoon, it's anime. But I always wanted to be on a Saturday morning cartoon, so when I booked the Yu-Gi-Oh! Show, I was like, oh my god, I'm on Saturday morning cartoons! So I would say no, you don't have to be a fan of it, but, you know, like anything, it's like you have to be a good actor first.
Yes.
Yeah, so if you're a good actor, I think you can do anything.
And
you know?
It's important to know, like with promo or with audiobooks, mm-hmm. the difference between anime in terms of style and energy versus something for, you know, Disney Junior is going to have a different vibe than
completely.
You
yeah.
know.
So, I mean, it helps to know, like, the style of anime. Like, it's more realistic talking. Like, it's...
Yeah.
It's not, like, super animated or super weird, the majority of it. I mean, I'm sure there's exceptions to everything, but, like my show Hanazuki, which is, like, a kid's animated show. It airs on Discovery Family. Mm-hmm. That was, like, wacky and, like, funny and, like, big. But, like, Sword Art Online, which was a popular anime, was, like, emotional.
Yes.
And, like, I cried during a scene, and it was, like, it was more... grounded, even though they are, like, in a virtual, they go into, like, virtual reality worlds. So, no, you don't have to be a fan, but there are a lot of people who are fans of it that get into voice acting for anime. So, yeah.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. How did you, so you started with that, and that was what got you into Yu-Gi-Oh!
Yeah. So I started with Yu-Gi-Oh! In New York, and then when I moved to LA, I reached out to a studio that did a lot of anime, and I was like, hey, I was in Yu-Gi-Oh! And they knew what that was, and they were like, oh, sure, like, come in for a general audition.
Awesome.
And then they started casting me in a lot of their shows.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
What a blast. Now, are you doing all that to picture, or...
Oh, yeah.
All of it.
So, anime is very tedious. Because you're dubbing, so you have to go line by line by line, and you have to make sure it fits the lip flaps, as we say, because they're all... already animated.
Yeah.
So it can be, like, tedious and a little bit grueling, but it's fun. I mean, you're still acting, but it's different from, like, original animation where, like, I'm on Barbie Dreamhouse Adventures.
Oh, wow.
So we record as a cast.
Oh, fabulous.
Which is so fun. So it's a completely different vibe because, you know, you're, like, doing the scene with the other actors and you're, like, goofing off in between and, like, bonding with everybody. So yeah, it's a completely different vibe.
That's so great.
Mm-hmm.
That's so great. One of the things that struck me, too, about what you're doing is you're, like, I ran across your YouTube channel and just how much you share, like, with both fans and people who are interested in getting into voiceover and that kind of stuff. And I don't know. I think that's awesome. And I think it's important because there is so much... There's become so much information about this work.
Yeah.
How do you, you know, well, why do you feel compelled to do that?
Social media for me is fun. So, I mean, I don't know, there's so much you could say about social media, but when I found out that the things I had been recording in a booth by myself, solo, were, like, you know, they had fans and that they had, like, their own communities and their own conventions, I was, like, shocked because I didn't know any of that. So social media has been a way for me to, like, connect with the people who watch my work or play the games that I'm in. And it's, like, I can have a dialogue with them. Mm. And it's, they're fun. Like, especially the Persona 5 fans, they're so fun and they're funny. And, like, there's so many memes that go with the show.
Mm.
So it's, like, I'll just, like, throw something out on Twitter and get, like, 40, like, responses right away. Because, like, they all get the joke.
Yeah.
Or something. So, I don't know. It's just, like, it's wild because, like, going back to when I was a kid and wanting to be in TV and film, like, you assume, like, you know, those people have fans, you know, because they're in a movie. You see their face and, like, watch them on these things. But with voiceover, like, you never think you're going to have, like, fans. It's like, I always thought getting into VO would be a more anonymous thing.
Yeah.
But anime and the video games have really changed that. And all the fan conventions have really changed that, so...
Yeah.
It's funny. It's like the fans and the conventions have just become like this unexpected bonus.
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't know, it's a lot of fun to like post something and then like get comments and then like talk to them and see what they think about it. And
yeah.
Yeah. I know, it's funny.
How have you managed, have you had to like, you know, like with networking, how do you manage relationships with fans? Or do you, are you just like, is it better to be, I'm just me, and this is me being me, reacting honestly to you, or do you have to sort of, do you know what I mean? Like there's,
have a persona.
Yeah. I mean, and not like, obviously not something that's like phony. I mean, like I think, when I think like, if, like a good example for me is like if I'm hosting an improv show, for example, it's still me, but it's an elevated version of myself because I'm talking to a larger group of people and I'm a little bit quicker and I'm a little bit glibber than I would be one-on-one.
Totally. I think everybody kind of adjusts their personality when they're on a stage or like in front of people. So maybe on Twitter, I'll be, like, a little more snarky or, like, I'll, like, try to think of, like, a funny thing to say. You know, I won't just post, like, what I'm having for lunch or, like, if I'm having a bad day, I don't, like, broadcast it online. Or if, like, something really personal happens, I don't put that online. Unless I think, like, people will be able to relate to it.
Mm.
I think, like, the only personal thing I've put on, like, super personal to me in the last, like, year was, like, this was so weird, like, it was the anniversary of, like, one of my friend's deaths. And, like, that same day, like, an engineer walked in wearing a shirt from a band he used to, like, tour manage.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, oh, my God, that's my friend. Like, he's saying hi. Yeah. So, like, I felt like I had to share that because I don't know. Something about it, I was like, I need to tell people that, like, things like this happen.
Yeah.
So, like, if they've lost somebody, like... I don't know, I felt like it was important to, like, tell people that, like, they're not gone.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, I don't know. I feel like, yeah. Okay, anyway, going back. So, Twitter, I try to be, like, more snarky. YouTube, I'm still, like, figuring out my, like, what I want to do with my channel.
Yeah.
So, I've been doing a lot of, like, Persona 5 related videos because I have a lot of followers that really like Persona 5 and are into it, so... I know that that's what they want to see, and I don't know, I just have fun, like, making weird skits with my character. So,
that stuff has been hilarious. I saw you read, like, the book.
Oh, yeah, the book.
Go the F to Sleep.
Yeah, yeah.
With
Go
with
the F
character.
To Sleep. See, that was a meme from Persona 5, because my character always says, you look tired today, you should go to sleep. And then there's, people would ask me to, like, sign the Go the F to Sleep book.
Uh-huh.
For, like, a year, people were like, will you read this book in Morgana's voice? And I never did it, but then one day I was like, you know what? I'm just going to do it.
Uh-huh.
I put it on YouTube. That's gotten, like, a lot of views. But, yeah, I don't know where I'm going to go with it. I'm just kind of, like, figuring it out as I go along. But I don't want it to be, like, fake and, like, oh, my God, this is my perfect life and every day is great. So I feel like I don't share a lot of, like, my personal life on YouTube. Like, I don't do a lot of, like, vlogs where I'm just, like, talking about, like, my day and what I've been going through.
Yeah.
I try to do more, like, entertaining content.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm still figuring it out. And then Instagram, oh, my God. I mean, I have, like, I just post photos of myself, honestly. Because, like, I don't know what else to post.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I feel like it's boring if I'm like, here's my lunch. It's like, who cares?
Right.
Yeah, but if I have like one of my friends just takes like amazing photos. So like she's taken a bunch of my photos and they just, I don't know, I just like, they came out good. So I post them. Or like if I'm at a con and I see like a really cool cosplayer, I'll post them because like, you know, that's like.
That carries weight. It means something.
Yeah.
And like I love like if I see someone who's doing something that I was involved in, like.
Yeah.
Like BioShock Infinite is one of the games I was a voice in. And,
cool.
And like. To like see Elizabeth's and like do pictures with, I love those. My favorite picture is actually my profile picture where I was at LA Comic Con when it was Stan Lee's Kamikaze, and there was a little sister, and she was super short, and her cosplay of the little sister from the original BioShock was amazing, and we got our picture together and stuff.
That's so cool. Yeah, and it's just, I don't know, I just like to let other people see like that and like the fandom and the cosplays and stuff. So.
I'm with you, though. Like, someone had the idea, and I liked it, so I did it. I created a second Instagram profile that's more buttoned up. That's like if I was to send, you know, like an email to a studio to say, hey, check out. I'd love to invite you to check out my Instagram feed, and I don't want them to see all my goofy like stuff where I'm serving. Like fans of a TV show I did, and it's just a bunch of stupid stuff. I want them to see my motion capture work or whatever, you know?
Cool. Yeah, that's smart. I feel like as an actor or as any creative person who like basically is self-employed, like you have to have something on the web that showcases all of your work. So, yeah, that's smart that you have that.
I've only got 7 pictures on it.
But you don't have to have a million, you know, that's as long true. As, like, it's just, like, this is what I do, and, like, here's, like, really good content that you can watch that will give you an idea of who I am.
And it's a link to something I can show you versus weed through my feed and skip past my Christmas pictures with me and my family.
And nobody's going to do that anyway, so.
No one is going to.
It's better that you have 7, yeah.
That's right. I agree. That's awesome.
Yeah.
How do you approach a piece of animation copy, for example? Let's say, for example, you get an audition from an agent and it's for a character for, let's say, a new Disney Junior pilot.
Mm-hmm. So first I look at the art that they send with it. They almost always send art. So I just get like a visual of what they have created. Then there's usually a bio or like a character description.
Mm-hmm.
I found that a lot of it is just, it doesn't help. So I try not to pay too much attention to it. It'll just like give a backstory, but it won't say like the personality or the age. So like, I really just look for like their personality and how old they are. And that's it. Like, that's kind of all you need to know.
Yeah.
And then I'll look at the script and you kind of break it down the same way you would like a TV script or like a theater or anything. So like you just break it down into beats and you just, you know, interpret like what is happening in this scene, you know, acting 101. What do they want, you know?
Yeah.
And then figure out like if there's any action going on because you want to like make sure you voice the action.
You do efforts and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, this door is stuck.
Instead of being like, this door is stuck.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, you see like if there's any action involved and just see like where it goes.
Yeah.
So yeah, I approach it like, you know, any actor would for like any medium really.
You had mentioned earlier, like you might do a second take on it and make it really different. Like, given our hypothetical Disney Junior pilot that's come to you, what choices might you make? Let's say the character is a talking ice cream cone, and it's a cartoon that is set at a trendy shop where we're making different flavors of ice creams and they're all different. It would never get made. But you're the strawberry ice cream and you're on a cone and there's no backstory.
No backstory.
Oh my gosh. Well, yeah, you're chipper. You're happy. You're the positive one in the group. You're also, your expiration date is a little bit older than some of the new ice creams in the in the case. So you've been around the block. You've seen some flavors come and go. But you're strawberry. So you've been there for a while.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not trying to put you on, I don't know why I'm improvising the idea of a new cartoon for Disney Junior set in an ice cream parlor, but I am. And it's called McDuffie's, and I think it's brilliant. Okay. So what's your contrast take to what you might do with...
Well, first you could go, because you said she's super chipper and happy, so you could play her like, let's use stereotypes, you could be like a cheerleader. Like, she's like motivating everybody and just like super chipper and happy and let's go. But you also, so that could be the first take. And then the second take could be like, yeah, she's chipper and happy, but maybe more confidence instead of like annoying, like happy all the time.
Yeah.
And then her expiration date is older, so like she's been around the block, so like she has maybe like a little more swag.
Uh-huh.
You know, so like, you know, you could go from a cheerleader to like the older, like cool sister, maybe who lives in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go.
That's awesome. Terrific. I love it. Now I just got to get, now I just got to write the thing and come up with artwork.
There you go. You should make it. We could put it on my YouTube channel.
That would be awesome. Now we solved a couple problems.
Yeah.
That's awesome. we're running out of time.
This has gone by so fast.
I know. Tell me about it. So, two things before I get into plugs.
Sure.
What advice would you give someone who's like, I'm really interested in doing this work. I think I've got, you know, skills that would work in it.
Mm-hmm.
I've taken some acting classes,
mm-hmm.
so I'm a decent actor.
Okay.
What do you recommend?
So, you definitely need a reel. It's going to be your calling card. And if you've already taken the classes, then if you haven't taken a voiceover class, take a voiceover specific class. If you have, and you know you're getting good feedback and like honest feedback from your teacher, you know, then take the step and get a professional reel made.
Yeah.
And you could start by sending it out to studios, so you could, you know, check the voiceover resource guide, but also like do your research.
Hmm.
There are some studios that like specialize in producing anime or video games. You could try cold emailing them. You could also network with the other people in your classes, like especially the voiceover ones. Like, where are you working? Like, what have you worked on? Watch the credits for stuff. You know, find out like, where was this produced? Is it in LA? Is it in New York? And, you know, just do some research and send your reel out there. If you have an agent, ask, like, do you have a voiceover department? Can you introduce me to them?
Yeah.
If not, there are, like, agency meet and greets that are at, you know, like, some, like, there's, like, clinics where you can, like, meet an agent and talk to them.
Yeah.
It's not guaranteed that you'll even get, like, an interview with them, but you can at least get an idea of, like, how should I submit my reel to your agency?
Yeah.
Or you could just, you know, look on Backstage...
Yeah.
And find the contact for all the voiceover departments and cold email them.
Do a mailing. Yeah.
Yeah. And usually you won't hear back at first, but if you follow up in like, I would say 4 weeks, give it like at least 4 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, just follow up and see if you get a response.
Yeah.
And, you know, even if it's a no, maybe try again in like 6 months.
Yeah.
So yeah, there are ways in, but it takes a lot of self-starting and self-motivating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Persistence and...
Mm-hmm.
And if you get a bunch of no's, like, go work on it.
Yeah, that's true, too. It's like maybe you're getting a lot of no's, not because they have somebody that sounds like you, but because you're not ready yet.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's nothing wrong with taking class.
Yes.
You know, it's like... I like to say acting is like dance. Like, if you're a ballet dancer, you're not going to not take ballet class... Just because, like, you're just never not going to take class. Like, you're not going to go to an audition after not having danced for 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't make sense. You're not going to be, you know, flexible. You're not going to be as on point. Pun intended. yeah. So, like, there's nothing wrong with, like, working out your voice and just, like, practicing the content and the copy and, like, cold reading and making characters and stuff like that. Like, I still take classes, and it's same. I learn something every time. It's like, I know a lot of the stuff that they're saying, sure, but I always learn something, so. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's so great. That's one of the most comprehensive lists of what to do.
Oh, good.
That I've heard.
Do
really,
it.
That's really great. That's true, though. Like, becoming an actor is not like getting your driver's license. It's not like you're done now.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is a constant. It's like entering this space and discovering it being a complete and total universe.
Yeah.
That is open for exploration.
Yeah.
And for making mistakes. Mm-hmm. Like, that's one of the things I loved about, like, going to cast and director workshops and stuff like that when I first got to town was, like, I wish that I remained a little bit more anonymous in those groups so I could really get more information without attaching,
yeah, you know? Hi, I'm Kiff and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Yeah, I get it.
You know what I mean?
But, like, we've all been there. You yeah. know, you just, like, a lot of it's trial and error. Like, yeah. it's a creative career, so there's no, it's not like a stepladder, you know? Yeah. There's not, it's not like a corporate career where it's like, first you're this, then you're this, then you're this. It's like, it's a zigzag and yeah. a roller coaster, and there's lots of different ways to make it and to work, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so awesome.
It's not for the faint of heart.
It is not. It is not. And at the same time, it is for you. You need to remain vulnerable, too.
Oh, yeah.
You know, in a really interesting way of, like, maintaining strength and vulnerability. I've been taking acting and movement workshops with Terry Notary recently. Mm-hmm. And, like, I just took one this past weekend. And one of the things that he kept saying, and it's just, I think it's good for, in particular for my type to hear, he's like, you can be strong and soft.
Yeah.
You know, you should be. Like, don't be rigid because you feel like you have to have this shell. Like, be, you're a big person. It's, mm-hmm. you're going to carry a certain weight, but be open and be vulnerable. Your strength is in your size.
Yeah.
You don't have to put it on.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And it's like, sometimes you learn new things like that, and sometimes you just need to be reminded of things.
Yeah.
That, like, maybe you just forgot for some reason, or, like, they just tell you things that you need to hear at that time in your career or in your life. And it just, I don't know. It always helps.
I agree. So. Oh, it's so awesome.
Yeah.
How can people find you, interact with you, ask, because you do Q&As on your YouTube channel
yep.
and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, how can people connect to you?
On YouTube, I'm just Cassandra Lee Morris. On Instagram, I'm Cassandra.Morris. And on Twitter, I'm So Cassandra. But if you just search for Cassandra Lee Morris on Twitter, you should find me.
Yes.
Yeah.
And do you have anything that is running that you'd like to invite people to check out? Or books that have, like the one that you were narrating, I think Hachette just posted, like, 2 weeks ago, I think.
Oh,
I
did saw. They? Or,
yeah, they did.
Cool.
Well, we had talked about it, and I had heard, like, your read on it, and I was like, oh, my God. It's like this
yeah.
really wild,
yes.
intense read.
That book was All the Lost Things, and it's about a really young girl whose father kidnaps her, but she doesn't know that she's been kidnapped because she's so young. Yeah, and it's all first person. So that was definitely a ride.
Yeah.
Hanazuki, my animated series, is airing on Discovery Family. I think new episodes have been on Saturdays, but they tend to air it every day. So if you can catch it, it's so good. Oh, my God. I love Hanazuki. There's Barbie Dreamhouse Adventures on Netflix. I play Stacy. And then Persona 5, which is a big video game. That won't come out till 2020. But we're going to start recording. Oh, and then my newest thing. This is so exciting. I'm a new character, a new champion in League of Legends.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
that's so fantastic.
She's coming out May 14th, I want to say. So, yeah, Yumi. She's so cute. She's a magical cat. And I love her. She's the best.
Oh, that's so awesome.
Yeah, everybody play Yumi. Or just watch the YouTube videos of, like, pros playing her. That's what I do. She's so cute. She has this joke. Like, any champion in League has, like, if you press J or something, it's a joke.
Uh-huh.
So hers is, and this isn't a spoiler, but she, like, sticks her head in her book, which is a companion, and she comes out, and she has a piece of toast on her head. Yeah, it's a Japanese meme. Well, started it in Japan, but, yeah, it's a meme.
That's so wild.
Yeah, cat toast. I love it.
Oh, Cassandra, thank you so much for coming in.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Oh, my gosh. You're just, thank you for everything you shared and continued success and everything. And I look forward to seeing Cat Toast and other things.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. This was awesome.
Awesome. Yeah. And thank you for listening. And more episodes coming soon. Get what you get. Don't get upset. Peace.
Bye.
This has been All Over VoiceOver with Kiff VH. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, please go to iTunes and give us a positive rating. It truly helps. Follow me on Twitter at KiffVH or on Instagram at KiffVH or on Vero at KiffVH. Thanks so much for listening. Talk to you soon. Claim victory and depart the field.
Werewolf?
Yeah.